And that's
you're trying to make a statement.
Well, actually, he was just trying to sit down here. I don't think he was trying to make a statement. He's getting a, he got a ticket for sitting here.
Ticket for sitting on a statue.
$162 ticket.
Well,
yeah, I'm out with Mr. Khan and he's almost...
Nurse. I usually go by the name Nurse.
Also, the big this guy's a maintenance law.
Well, this law too dates the Kennedy law,
but it is still, I think, being... This statute was customarily used to sit on, and therefore I think you'll lose your ticket in court.
But I could be wrong.
I'm totally right, and you've got paper in your hand to take it to court and challenge it.
Now, I want to make a phone call.
Would anyone like to volunteer?
You want me to make a phone call?
With circles and X's and...
Don't go away.
So we're here in front of the Tom Skidmore statue.
We see a tourist in a Scandia shirt.
Yes, I do see that.
Mm-hmm. As a young child standing on the statue.
Right.
And actually, I stopped tape recording at that point because I got up to make a phone call. When I returned, the sergeant had left. I sat down again for a bit. But on Friday, if you take a ticket, you have to go to jail all weekend if they choose to put you in jail. Looks like we just had an incoming phone call. What's with that, Becky?
That was David Silva, who called in, and he opted not to be on the air, but he wanted to remind people that he seriously needs signature gathers for the hate-free zone petition that is currently being circulated in Santa Cruz. And he meets in front of city council on Thursdays from noon to 1. Is that correct?
It's at the fountain of the city.
Right in front of the fountain at City Hall. And you can meet David then and pick up your petitions. And more importantly, if you have those petitions out there and you're not quite done gathering your signatures, well, why not? You know, get up, go out, and gather them.
But just don't try to sit on the base of the monument in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz and gather signatures. Or perhaps you should. We'll see if that kind of restriction of people becomes a form of interference with registering voters. I always suggest when people go out and gather signatures that they take voter registration forms, because to interfere with a person registering voters is in fact a federal offense, which could be an opportunity, of course, in your dreams, mind you,
for the
feds to move in, or a federal lawsuit if you can find an attorney who wants to go to San Jose and front lots of money for that, which has always been a problem. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I just played you, you've been kind of running over an incident that happened on Friday night, sitting on a statue. There's actually a lot more serious stuff happening, as you may know. Steve Argue is facing up to 4 years in prison, actually 4+ years in prison in theory, probably less than a year in terms of what they are likely to do if he's found guilty, but then one can never tell with these people. And Judge Attic is particularly unpredictable. That's Artichoke Heart Attic, Führer of Department 5. That's the judge who has made numerous bizarre rulings, and maybe we should talk a little bit about that after we give an appropriate vocal number.
Yes, it's true, nobody fucks Uncle Spot like you.
Shut your fucking face, Uncle Papa. You're the woman, fuck your uncle, Uncle Papa. You don't even sleep on Mother Lawn, you just fuck your uncle all day long.
What's going on here?
I just couldn't avoid that delightful adolescent moment. That was, of course, from South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. You're tuned to Bathrop Spears Broadsides, our Sunday Civil Rights Show, which should run for another hour and a half if you're interested. Call in number 427-3772, 427-3772, if you want to join this discussion talking about hate-free zones. What we need is, of course, is an absurdity-free zone. That would be nice, too, if people are not being harassed for these minor code violations, which really give the police an opportunity to do whatever they want, because they can target the people that they want, and do. It actually has to do with hate crimes, and I'm sure that if we had David Silva in the studio, he would be happy to talk about how homeless people are really a group that's constantly dropped from this discussion of hate crimes against gays, hate crimes against African Americans and Hispanics, hate crimes against foreigners. These are all considered serious things, but when it comes to homeless people, it looks like they're kind of fair game. And actually, hate crimes have recently made the paper in Santa Cruz, I guess, with four different arrests this week for hate crimes against Hispanics. Again, in the story coverage, we had Sergeant Clark quoted by the Sentinels talking about these being the first hate crime arrests of the year, when in fact, Aaron Birch and actually a number of other thugs beat with clubs, pipes, and chains Joe Barker in one of only more than 20 assaults on sleeping homeless people whose crime was to simply believe they had the right to sleep somewhere, not in the middle of someone's front yard or in the middle of the road, but off in the bushes, hidden away, often abandoned buildings, hidden away, one in a building in Joe Barker's case with the permission of the owner. And we don't hear the police department or the media acknowledging that these are hate crimes, which in essence shows me that the police department and the media are complicit in this. They're not just negligent, because we've informed them of this repeatedly, and they just choose to ignore it, because it's okay to hate homeless people. It's okay to hate people who are poor and grubby. Now, you occasionally get someone like Donna Murillo, who is the Hanna Homeless Services Center Board of Directors, making a statement about how it's not okay to hate homeless people, and violence against them is not okay, and that's good. But the only problem with that, as you may have read in my letter to the Sentinel about a week ago, is that Murillo is in a position to do much more. She's a merchant who headed, of course, a hate campaign against the homeless downtown called Real Change, Not Spare Change, which were little cards and posters urging people not to give money to panhandlers, but to refer them to either full, non-existent, or answering machine answered services, so-called services. Don't give them money, give them a runaround, was sort of the message of the Real Change, Not Spare Change program. And more recently, the issue of people being beaten up has been brought to the board of the Homeless Services Center, on which Mayor Catherine Byers sits. And there's been questions raised about how about a safe zone for homeless people. Well, this damn board can't even get its shit together, if you'll forgive me for being so colorful, to recommend to the city council that they do something about this issue. Instead, they took 4 months and they came out with this sort of feeble, oh, hitting people is a bad thing resolution. I'm sorry, Homeless Services Center Board, that just does not cut the mustard. If you are not a part of the solution in this case, well, we know you're part of the problem to begin with because of the power you have that you're not exercising. You, in essence, embolden these hate crime people, because if nobody's doing something to find a solution to this, then why should people stop this kind of behavior of being abusive, violently abusive, to homeless people at night? Any comments on that, Becky? You were on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless's Board before Byers had you sliced from the cut last time, about last year. Any thoughts on that issue?
Well, I just wanted to remind our listeners that Donna Murillo, who is on the Board of Directors of Homeless Services Center, her day job is she's the PR representative for Red Tree Properties. And guess who's bringing us boarders? And also all the other fun things like Costco, Circuit City, Toys R Us, all brought to you by Red Tree Properties. And with Donna Murillo smoothing the way, this is the kind of person that we have in our town that is supposed to be some sort of community leader and an example for us to follow. I don't know why people back Donna Murillo. Donna Marlowe.
Well, she's a respectable merchant voice and also considered extremely compassionate because she's a part of the Homeless Services Center. Hopefully, this issue will be dealt with, that is to say, the issue of violence against homeless people and the need for homeless people to have an emergency safety zone, to me, is a sort of a separate issue from, let's say, a campground. A campground is a good idea because people have a right to be able to sleep at night. And it also makes sense for the community to establish facilities so people just don't sleep anywhere, because if it's equally illegal to sleep everywhere, then it doesn't matter where you sleep, except, you know, obviously you want to sleep in a concealed place. But in terms of public safety for women, children, older men who have been targeted by these trollbusters, they call themselves, hate criminal thugs who go attack homeless people, it's important to be able to sleep in a well-lit area. It's important to be able to sleep in groups. It's important to be able to sleep in areas where they're patrolled by the police even at different times, or that you could call a police officer over without feeling you're going to get a $54 or $162 ticket, since they're not just giving tickets for sleeping, but they're giving tickets for, quote, encamping, or lying down with intent to camp, you know? So it's important to have an emergency safety zone independent of the issue of a campground, independent of the issue of whether the sleeping ban is or isn't a good thing. And that whole issue, I cannot get Christopher Crone to raise it, I can't get Keith Sugar to raise it, I can't get Tim Fitzmaurice to raise it, and I certainly can't get Catherine Byers to raise it, in spite of all her nice little old lady posturing and her position on the Homeless Services Center Board of Directors. So hopefully this issue will be raised by the Homeless Issues Task Force, and it's a key issue. I will have to admit that I have not heard further instances of violence against homeless people, though ticketing is on the rise, particularly ticketing for encamping or intent to camp. And I guess, Becky, you're on the subcommittee that has been working on this resolution, a good resolution, passed by the Homeless Issues Task Force 2 weeks ago. It comes back to them tomorrow, where you're going to ask the City Council or tell the City Council that it's time to get off the dime and simply repeal the camping ordinance, at least the camping ban parts of the camping ordinance, since there are no legal places for the overwhelming majority of homeless people to sleep. The weather is getting colder, and people have a right to shelter themselves. They have a right to find some kind of place to sleep if there is no legal place for them to sleep and for their families to sleep. And you're going to be kind of looking into this. Actually, I mean, you were preparing a statement to present to the City Council, whatever good that's going to do. Do you have any update on that?
The task force was given 3 tasks, and that is to make recommendations for permanent emergency year-round shelter for homeless people, to examine existing services and make recommendations on how they might be improved and identify the gaps in those services. And the third task was to address the civil rights of homeless people. And the camping ban really kind of covers 1, 2, and 3, if you think about it. Certainly addresses the civil rights of homeless people, the right to sleep at night, the right to stay warm at night, the right to protect yourself from the elements. I mean, hey, winter's coming, and we haven't had any new shelter brought on since Community House came online in July of 98, and that established a place for only 40 people. We're glad to have Community House. It's very decent housing for those 40 people.
Very expensive housing, and you have to be dry, and you have to jump through a whole series of hoops, and you have to go through a waiting list, let's say that too.
Yeah, it has one of the, as far as criteria to get into Community House, it's greater than just about to get into an apartment locally here in Santa Cruz. They don't ask you to have been, not had a drink of alcohol in 30 days before applying. But back to the task force, this statement on the camping ban, we've identified that services are not, I can't say they're not existent. There are maybe what you would call token services in terms of shelter for the homeless. But there's some little shelter compared to how many people need to be sheltered that you can say there is no shelter. That would be more accurate. So Community Action Board has for years, and even Citizens Committee for the Homeless in 1989, Paige Smith drafted a statement that was passed by Citizens Committee for the Homeless against the entire camping ban, not just the sleeping ban section of the law, but the entire camping ban under the provision that it's just wrong to be criminalizing homeless people for acts they cannot help but do. That is, like, to fall asleep, preferably at night, to keep warm, if that means covering up with blankets, and if it's raining or cold, you have to insulate against the elements somehow. And some of the comments that came up, I was at this subcommittee meeting that was held at Community House recently, where we were actually had, I'm not on the board of directors of the task force. I'm not a member of the board, but I am a citizen volunteer. And we were discussing all these issues. We said, you know, we've clearly identified that there is inadequate shelter. And if you, not even for what are called the vulnerable populations, which are the elderly, the disabled, those unaccompanied minors, single mothers with children, veterans, and other subgroupings of homeless people who are, the city has given a priority to sheltering those, and even those are not being adequately sheltered. So we can document that and redocument it and informally document it and formally document that there is inadequate shelter for homeless people in Santa Cruz. Well, therefore, why write tickets and drag people through the court process? It seems part an abusive process. And so this task force is recommending that the city suspend enforcement of the camping ban law until that permanent year-round shelter does exist.
And my understanding is that the resolution was to simply repeal the camping ordinance at the moment, not just suspend enforcement. Are you weakening the resolution of the Homeless Issues Task Force?
The resolution was to repeal the camping ordinance. That was what the main group, yeah. But the discussion that followed in the subgroup was that juxtaposition of, we don't have adequate shelter, therefore, how can we enforce the camping ban at in that situation? And so that was how the subcommittee decided to do. You call that a weakening? I don't think so. I think it's a way of educating the community on that catch-22 that exists for homeless people, that, you know, the city has to, you know, decide, are we trying to help homeless people, or are we trying to hinder their progress? And the camping ordinance, as it's currently enforced, hinders the progress of homeless people to get their lives together and hopefully to get out of homelessness.
I would have to disagree. I think that asking for a suspension is considerably different than asking for an abolition. And I think that you might say that what you're saying is that if the city, through some set up barracks for homeless people, rigidly controlled kind of areas where they could go and had to go and be in at a certain time of night and had to be out at a certain time of night, had to, you know, couldn't come there if they were using drugs or having alcohol, they had all these requirements. This isn't going to happen, of course, but let's suppose they did this or made some claims that this were done. Then they would say, well, and as they have with the armory in the last few years, they said, well, people aren't, the armory has had empty space, folks, and, you know, people aren't using it. Therefore, people choose to run out and violate the law. That's not our problem. So your suggestion that the law be suspended only so long as there isn't shelter space, I think,
is a clear weakening of the intentions of the Homeless Issues Task Force, which went further. Ken Cole, the maker of that resolution, said there are other ordinances that can be used to deal with people who are outside, who are causing problems. Criminalizing people for setting up a shelter, criminalizing people for falling asleep is wrong, even if the government has some alternate facility that they're willing to say, if you subject yourself to various controls and go into, that you can do. It sounds like some bureaucratic person was warping what the Homeless Issues Task Force was doing. So I would have to take issue with that, but I mean, I understand that the rationale.
Can I respond?
Sure, you can.
You're making more points than I can respond.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, and the dilemma that we came up with was that there's a whole section of the camping ordinance called camping permitted. And so we were kind of caught in the dilemma. Did people really want to make it so that we wouldn't allow, the Shriners group to set up a campground someplace? And we thought that, no, that wasn't the intent, that some regulation of camping and how it's conducted is reasonable, and that was not the intent of the task force to eliminate that. And so we're only talking about the camping ban portion of, and we were unanimous in that was what we believed that the task force meant, was that the camping ban section of be disallowed.
Okay, first of all, you're not talking about the camping ban sections being repealed. You were talking about them being suspended until such time as there is adequate shelter. That's not talking about even only dealing with the camping ban sections. That is talking about a much weaker approach. Secondly, to say you oppose the entire camping ordinance is not to say you don't oppose the right of people to camp. In fact, you favor the right of people to camp. When you eliminate the entire ordinance, you are saying to the city council, you have to find a new way to regulate camping, and this completely damaged, fatally flawed, discriminatory ordinance which has been on the books since 1978. That's all you're saying.
That's the camping ban portion that is so fatally flawed. No, the entire ordinance is
as a whole, the entire ordinance is flawed. Therefore, you throw it out and you rewrite it. Now, when you rewrite it, you might choose to keep certain sections or to reword them, but you throw out the ordinance to begin with and then you start again. You rewrite it based on a rational appreciation of the homeless population in Santa Cruz, the transient population, the needs of the Shriners, the needs of other people. But you don't say, gosh, because we'd like to have the Shriners camp, therefore we're going to throw out everything but Section C of the ordinance, or Section 6.36030 or something. You say the ordinance as a whole is fatally flawed. We don't want it. We don't need it. What we need is a better and a different ordinance. And I think that really is what was being said by this body. They weren't saying, and they were also saying, I have to agree with you, that they don't, that it's the camping ban essence of the ordinance they don't like. But they weren't saying, well, keep this section but throw out that section, as we were doing, for example, last year when we talked about the sleeping ban and the blanket bans. They were talking about the entire camping ordinance. They weren't saying you shouldn't regulate camping, no, but they were saying that this ordinance sucks. Dump it.
Don't you think?
Yeah, in fact, that was the exact word that kind of summed it up at the end. This ordinance, it generally sucks.
I looked at some of the work that your subcommittee did, and I've not got a lot of fault with it. I was, I'm quick to jump in and start wrestling around with the wording, and I sometimes take too combative an attitude because I think we're all on the same side here. And I invite people to come tomorrow to the Homeless Issues Task Force 5:30 at the ABC room of the Civic Auditorium. That's right across from the main library on Monday, September 20th, I think it is. Today is the 19th, if I'm not mistaken. It is Sunday the 19th. I'm also going to be proposing a number of other things, or I'm hoping that someone will be proposing them. I know their ideas I support. That there be a legal subcommittee that starts to help people who are dealing with court cases, not in terms necessarily of providing city legal help, but simply, for example, getting on paper for the judges to see and for homeless people to be able to bring into court what has already been done on this issue. For instance, last December 10th, Christopher Crone's resolution that sleeping is a need and a right was passed
by the city council. I think it was actually, it was either passed 4-3 or I think unanimously, I'm not sure. It was also, there was a resolution passed, probably 4-3, that there should be ticketing only on complaint, or generally on complaint and generally after a warning. That was also a directive of the city council that, by the way, is not being followed with any regularity by either the Parks and Rec or by the police department. So I think that needs to be transmitted to the courts. So homeless people need to have that letter. They also need to have a letter that states something to the effect that since the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program is almost always filled, and probably always will be filled, that they have the right to use the ICORN defense, and that the city attorney recognizes the ICORN defense. The ICORN defense, for those of you who don't know, is the right of a homeless person charged with camping to argue that he had to violate the law to avoid a greater evil, the so-called necessity defense. And that has been upheld as a legitimate defense against camping tickets if you can show it, and the courts have to allow it. All this should go out under the Homeless Issues Task Force as a sort of their advice, and it should be signed by, you know, it should be an official letterheads from the city or from the Homeless Issues Task Force, and homeless people should be able to bring these letters into court to say, hey judge, you know, before you decide you're going to screw me over, read this. They should also, of course, have something that says that the fines have been reduced to $54. As I've talked about in previous shows, City Attorney John Barasoni just inexplicably failed to tell the courts that in April of 1999 of this year, the fines were dropped from $162 to $54. And I should tell you that those fines are still being presented as $162 in the court of Meat Grinder Mulligan, so-called, because he likes to turn out fines like sausages, regardless of the law. He's a referee who wears black robes and sits up on the judicial bench as though he were a judge. It's actually the lowest form of judge in more senses than one. So there's a lot of things the Homeless Issues Task Force, I think, can effectively do. There's lots of other things happening, however, around the city and around the state, and perhaps this tune will seg you in with what those things are. Unless you have anything you want to conclude with, Becky, on this subject.
How can we criminalize people for sleeping out of doors or protecting themselves when we don't have adequate shelter? We haven't had adequate shelter in the last 10 years. We're not likely to have it real soon. We haven't established any new shelter for this winter. Coming up.
You know, I keep hearing that argument endlessly, and it seems to fall on deaf ears. And I guess the answer to me is, how can we squeeze the pocketbooks of the merchants and the political genitalia of the city council so that they will act on this issue and not just sort of nod and smile and then, like Catherine Byers, drive off in their red Jaguars? That's what we need to figure out. Not just, you know, what new resolution can this little committee or that little committee put forward, as is going to happen tomorrow, and I've got nothing against that happening, but what can we, the community, do, ranging from boycotts, ranging from pickets, ranging from, I don't know, sing-ins, sleep-ins, dance-ins, who knows what-ins, downtown, to make it real clear to the merchants who really run that city council, even though we thought we'd elected a new one, that this kind of violation of human rights has got to stop. I'll tell you, it's not going to stop because the Homeless Issues Task Force makes a recommendation. That is for damn sure, unless the community backs it up. But again, let's get on to another subject, and if you have any thoughts on this subject, please give us a call, 427-3772.
Trade on the a trick. I told him from the get this land would never be for sale. The patchwork of my life was lived through.
Hi, you're on the air on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Whoops, oh, sorry about that, caller. I will hope to catch you during the next break, and I will continue the song. Before we do, however, here's a little update from the San Francisco Chronicle, interesting, called Convicts with Guns. In Greenland, not all the convicts are allowed to hunt during reindeer season. If you are mentally ill, you fish. Convicts walk the streets, hold jobs, and go to bars, but they have to be in their cells from 9:30 p.m. to 6 a.m., pay for their board, and accept counseling. It's very hard to be here, a multiple murderer told Lucy Jones of the London Guardian. They write reports on me all the time. I have to ask permission to do things. Greenland has no closed prisons. That's the Inuit way. That's Eskimos. Inuit is the Eskimo culture. If someone is really dangerous, not just a common murderer or pedophile, they send him to Denmark. Jones says that the recidivism rate in Greenland is, get this folks, 1%, and that there are very few escapes. Where would one go? That's from the San Francisco Chronicle. Louis Dolinsky notes from here and there. So this is Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're tuned to 96.3 FM, and we may have a call coming in, if we can. And it looks like we don't have a call coming in, but hopefully, however, we will have some calls coming in. You'll soon have an open line. We're having a little trouble with our telephone here. That was from, as I said, Louis Dolinsky, Notes from Here and There in the September 17th San Francisco Chronicle. Very interesting. 1% recidivism in Greenland, I mean, for open prisons. So is it necessary to lock everybody up in cages? Apparently, people in Greenland don't think so. A big issue around the Steve Argue trial has been the... Well, not the Steve Argue trial, around the whole May 22nd incident where numerous police officers made decisions, particularly Officer David LaFaver, Sergeant Colleen McMahon, Officer Tripp, and others, to arrest people who were surrounding a van in a situation that was created by officers initially arresting a woman named Kua Ling Liao for holding a boombox, they said, with sounds of the Yugoslavian bombing in such a fashion that it disturbed the plush Democratic Party fundraiser that was going on in the McPherson Center, at which Representative Sam Farr, a supporter of the bombing of Yugoslavia, was in attendance. Farr then and now has refused to answer critical questions and serious questions about the bombing in Yugoslavia. And as a consequence, many people were protesting, some of them banging on the windows, some of them shouting, singing, and sounds of the bombing was being played on the boombox. And suddenly this woman, Kua Ling Liao, was arrested by police and quickly hauled down to the patrol wagon without being told what the charges were, and the crowd wasn't told either. In fact, supposedly the individual who complained about that whole thing from the inside later wrote, and this came out in testimony last week at the Argue trial, that the police had the wrong woman. So the crowd surrounding the van was saying, what is she being charged for? What's going on? And the police response was simply to start arresting people who had surrounded the van, and they picked on the people with children. And for those of you who don't know, if you get arrested, your child gets taken into Child Protective Services frequently, which is not the best place for children to go, particularly from alternative culture type families, hippie families. You can end up finding your child adopted out. And so when Julianne and her child were being dragged off to the van and in a bizarre pain compliance hold. He called it a pain compliance hold, but other officers at the trial testified they didn't use such a hold as Officer LaFaver was using on Julianne, causing her screaming and pain, causing her to lose her grip on the child that was kind of clinging to her neck. Steve Argue moved in, urged the officer to stop it. When the officer didn't, he punched him, and the woman and the child got away, and Lefebvre ran after Argue, threw him to the ground, pepper sprayed him twice, first from a distance too close for regulations, then secondly, according to Argue and a witness or two, shoved it in his mouth and pepper sprayed him. Shoved it in his mouth and pepper sprayed him, which is actually can be lethal to someone who has asthma. So that whole case has provoked a number of complaints to the Citizens Police Review Board, which, as you know, is fundamentally a toy group created by the Kennedy City Council back in 1994. Instead of any real review with a mandated independent process and some kind of disciplinary power, or some kind of independence of the city manager and some kind of mandated public hearing process, none of those things exist. They simply rubber stamp what the police department does. They look over the shoulders of the police department, and they sort of do ride-alongs with the police department. They're sort of a little accessory to the police department, kind of a little whitewash accessory. That's what they've been. Now, new board members have said they want to change this. The new one's appointed by Crone, Sugar, and Fitzmaurice. And indeed, they've made a few tentative motions in that direction, in that they voted to appoint an independent investigator to the Argue case, and also all the events around May 22nd, where police officers, for no apparent reason, seem to be rousting a protest, raising the whole level of confrontation, and acting in a fashion that endangered children, and just created a whole crisis that wasn't there. For those who think it was a rowdy demonstration, I'd like to point out that nobody who was banging on the window was even warned, much less arrested, for doing that. And the police took no action, although that behavior continued for some time, even after this whole event with Steve Argue and the punching of Officer Lefebvre. So what seems to be the case here is that there was no illegal behavior going on at all. There was a political decision by the Santa Cruz Police Department. It's time to shut down this protest. Or let's put it this way, it's time to act like a bunch of police officers in a fashion oblivious to the consequences, act like individuals who are demanding a kind of, well, their high-profile use of force in this situation, and perhaps with the wrong woman. Their failure to explain what they were doing prompted a confrontational situation which got worse and worse, and which to some extent we can credit Councilmember Keith Sugar with cooling out. He came out later, actually shortly after the round of arrests of the Santa Cruz Five, as they're called, Steve Argue, Vince Lombardo, Nassim Zarefi, Kuo-Ling Liao, and Jim Costner, and told the police, don't make any more arrests unless there's something really seriously illegal going on here, because we don't need you to. We can deal with the noise. We can deal with the shouting. We can deal with the singing. We are politicians. We expect, we are public people. We expect people to have protests about the bombing in Yugoslavia. And
he said, don't arrest people for banging on the glass.
Right, and he also said that. So the point here is that, if I can retain my thought again, that the whole issue was prompted and provoked by the police department, and that this became the substance of a whole bunch of complaints to the Citizens Police Review Board, and the board then hired this woman, Diane Christensen, who actually came to town yesterday and was meeting with some folks. I was able to talk to her, among other people, about the issue of how to proceed because there's no precedent for an independent investigation. This is what's called an early independent investigation before the issue even goes to the police department through its investigator. This is the opportunity of the police review board to kind of preempt the issue and not leave it in the hands of the police department, but take independent action. Of course, they're taking it quite late. May 22nd is quite a ways from September 19th. That's a number of months down the road. And the police department has been running around taking statements from people, inappropriately in some cases, but ill-advisedly from the point of view of the people, because there are charges pending, charges created by the police department in this case. Anyway, the question then has become recently an issue of what's going to happen. The independent investigation seemed to be an opportunity for some outside authority to look into what's going on, make recommendations, and let the community know what's happening, at least from another perspective. That has been seriously thrown into question by an opinion by John Barisoni, city attorney. That city attorney has stated that whatever the independent investigator finds out, it will all be kept in confidence except for the one word, sustained, exonerated, unfounded, or unsustained, that is the disposition of any particular complaint. She cannot comment on anything more. The report will simply be under locked and key. Any thoughts on this, Becky?
Well, that did cause some of the people to wonder whether they should even bother to cooperate with the independent investigator if the results are going to be not made public. I mean, that's the whole point of having independent investigation, is so that the public is satisfied that they know the facts of what happened and that they don't have to rely on other authorities who have demonstrated that they're not giving a accurate description of events, and there perhaps are misdeeds that are being covered up in the process.
Yeah, so we were looking for ways around this. Indeed, John Barisoni suggested there are several ways it could get around this. One is for there to be kind of a joint public-private process, that before even looking at any so-called confidential police file documents, the independent investigator simply held public hearings, asking each of the non-police witnesses what happened, having them cross-examine and question, almost as though they were in court, and so setting up a situation where the public gets some sense of what's going on and the whole thing hopefully gets some publicity, which would get the issue out. Then the public investigator could go to the and police would be invited to testify if they wanted. If they didn't want to testify in that section of the hearing, there could then be the investigator could go in and start looking at the private files, and then the report would be made private. But until that time, it would have been public, and so much of the testimony would be there publicly. We're also hoping that the Citizens Police Review Board will get another opinion than John Barisoni, who's really kind of notorious for supporting the conservative staff and majority on the old city council, and look for those localities like Oakland, possibly Los Angeles, which have taken another stance on the confidentiality question. This is all pretty technical and maybe kind of irrelevant, and to some extent, because the real question here is the community's response to police abuse. The kind of response, for example, that we have when somebody like Daniel Garcia is shot dead by the police. You may have read yesterday's San Jose Mercury News. Police man's family recount fatal shot. And this, of course, is the seventh victim this year by the police department. It's interesting, the San Jose Mercury News is now calling the people that the police shot victims, not suspects, not criminals, but victims. This at least is a positive change. In an article by Rodney Fu, yesterday's Mercury News, we have them stating the following. This is a record year for fatalities. San Jose police shootings have killed seven people in 1999, a 10-year high. On February 6th, Anthony Manuel Montiel, 31, was shot dead by John Seportin. On March 1st, Long Phi Tran, 24-year-old person, was shot dead by Sergeants James Overstreet, David Goldfinger, and William Foster. On April 2nd, victim Robert Sabala Jr., 31, killed by Officer James Randall. On April 18th, looks like about 2.5 weeks later, Jesus Julio Morales, 40 to 50 years old, was killed by Brad Rossmiller, another San Jose PD person. On June 19th, Ciro Anthony Tomasello, 46, was shot dead by Teddy LaCap and James Randall. Up, there's that name again. Looks like the second notch in his belt for that year. He previously killed Robert Sabala Jr. on April 2nd. July 1st, Odest Mitchell, 48, shot dead by Thomas D. Murphy and Anthony J. Mata. And finally, Danny Garcia, not to be, by the way, confused with the Daniel Garcia who testified at the police review board that he was really concerned about the use of pepper spray in the killing of Mark Garcia, another man shot dead by police. Danny Garcia was killed on last Thursday. That was just 3 days ago, 4 days ago by Officer Steve Pryor. And I'll read a little bit of the story for those of you who aren't familiar with this case. Chief says officer who killed Garcia never had fired his weapon in the line of duty before. Mostly this article is an apologia, an excuse, a series of excuses for the police department because they don't talk much to the witnesses and what actually happened. You get the police chief's statements, and just like we got Chief Belcher's statements after the shooting of Happy John Dine, and Belcher wrapped up the case essentially 3 hours after it happened, and then he had the DA on board 12 hours after it happened with their claim that Dine was pointing a weapon, that Dine was standing in a combat stance, that Happy John Dine was was visibly threatening officers, all of which was rejected or not seen by the many, many non-police witnesses. The police witnesses, officers carrying over, and Ben Newman, the catalyst bouncer, Carrie's friend who made the original complaint was being driven around in the back of their squad car, had one story, the story that Belcher and Art Danner, then DA, now God help us, judge, accepted. And here we have a similar situation where the police chief is quoted by the media. You don't get the ACLU being quoted, you get the police chief. Let's hear what it says. The bloodstained patch where Danny Garcia died from a San Jose police officer's bullet had not yet faded from the street Friday morning. Just steps away around the corner, Garcia's family members gathered at their Glenbury way home to grieve and wonder whether police had another alternative than to shoot to kill. They could have hit him with a billy club, said Jenny Garcia, Danny Garcia's mother. They could have knocked him down or shot him in the leg or arm. They didn't have to shoot him in the heart. But the officer had no choice except to draw and fire when Garcia, a troubled 32-year-old who had been battling drugs and booze, suddenly advanced on officers with a 9-inch kitchen knife in his hand Thursday night, police said. Now, if you read further down this article, you learn he was 15 feet away from the police when he was shot. That's what at least the police say, that he was 15 feet away. Who knows what the other witnesses say? Continuing, the officer, let's see. Garcia was the seventh man to die in a shooting involving San Jose police officers in 1999, a 10-year high.